there were tons of comments that was just like, oh, Disney come for her, and you know, all this stuff. And somebody was telling me, you need a lawyer up really quick, because I mean, it intimidated me enough to talk to an entertainment lawyer. And it was great, because this job allowed me to have a lot of really good conversations, not on my dime, but conversations with an entertainment lawyer asking him all of my questions.
Welcome to The Practical Filmmaker, an educational podcast brought to you by the Filmmaker Institute and Sunscreen Film Festival, where industry professionals talk nuts and bolts and the steps they took to find their success today. This week on the show, we're turning the tables. Your normal host, Tanya Musgrave, is our guest. In this episode, Tanya distills all of her previous guests' advice into one short sentence, tells us how she uses the Discord app to produce a feature film, and shares the story behind why the podcast changed from There to Here to The Practical Filmmaker. Find the full transcripts and more at thepracticalfilmmaker.com. I'm David George, your guest host for today. Tanya, welcome to your show.
This is super weird.
So, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you for the suggestion. I thought this was an interesting idea, and I'm very intrigued and weirded out, but yet very, very excited. It's going to be fun.
Well, of course, your voice is familiar to your listeners, but your listeners may not know much about your journey. I know you usually start by asking your guests what their kind of there to hear story is. How did they get here?
Yay.
But I'm not sure your listeners even totally know where here is for you.
Oh, no.
So can we sort of start by talking about what the scope of your professional focus is at this point?
Oh, wow. Right now, I am in the throes of producing a microbudget film. I'm here at my alma mater at Southern Adventist University, and their School of Visual Art and Design, they produce a microbudget feature every 4 years, so that the students are able to be a part of a project of that magnitude. And sometimes they have alumni come back and fill some key positions, and they needed a producer. And I'm also finishing up my master's, and I needed a capstone project. So, yay, synergy.
Gotcha. So you used to be a full-time employee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are you? But now you're freelancing again.
Yeah.
So you're a student and a freelancer.
Yeah.
That's sort of the mm-hmm. way you might be described professionally right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're also a podcaster, right?
Yeah,
so you're
right.
Sort of doing these three things.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm missing components of what you're doing now. Mm-hmm. As a freelancer, you're producing right now. Is that right?
Yeah. It didn't used to be something that I thought that I would want to do, honestly. When I was doing the international docs and I was able to just hop around, shoot, and hand over my footage, it was fantastic. I was like, this is all I ever want to do. But once I started realizing that I didn't necessarily have that passion of, you know, like knowing all the tech stuff and knowing all of this stuff, and I knew I was realistic enough with myself to know the limitations of where my passion and abilities intersected, and I was way past, or maybe fell short of where my passion was for that. So I was just like, okay, maybe something else. Maybe I will pursue just photography. And got caught up with a full-time position that put me in a producer role. And it set me up really well, actually, as a podcaster too, because we started this podcast as There to Hear. When I left that job, I was able to take on the podcast and, you know, make it my own. And it was really great. But for right now, yeah, producing, I just kind of fell into this, and I realized that I really like managing artists. I don't know. The practical side of me came out, which is probably why.
Practical side.
Yeah.
Practical filmmaker.
Yeah. I enjoy rubber meets the road kind of conversations, the brass tacks, where people can glean useful information.
Where did you first become interested in film, and can you give us sort of the 3-minute version of from then till now?
I had always loved behind the scenes, but
okay.
I never really knew what that was.
Behind the scenes, like
you
rented a DVD and
I saw special features
on it.
Yeah, I loved the behind the scenes stuff. I was like, oh, that is so cool. But I was never part of anything in high school like the AV club, or, you know, I didn't know how to edit, I don't feel like, until even way later. And I'm just like, how does this work? And this is so cool. I didn't know that there was a film program here at the school. My mom will tell me differently, because as in like a couple of nights ago, she said, I mentioned this to you. I literally do not remember this at all. But I didn't know which direction I wanted to go. I was in the music department.
You come from sort of the music.
Yeah.
Like that was your entry point.
Yeah. I wanted to record. I was in a digital audio production class, and there happened to be a film student there. And he was just like, hey, we need a sound designer. And I think it was just, I was a token girl because I was the only girl in that class. He's like, we don't have a girl on our team. Do you want to be our sound designer? And I realized later that nobody in the film department liked doing sound. And so I jumped into sound and I actually loved it. And it just so happened that I got an email from you about being part of that particular summer's feature.
Right, because I was producing a film at the time.
Yeah.
And we need, same thing, same story, yeah. Basically. We needed help with the sound side of things.
So I came on as a Foley artist, and I was talking with the filmmakers involved with that, and I was just like, you know, I never did anything in high school. I don't know anything about this. Like, I would love to be part of this world, but I don't know anything about it. And he's just like, duh, that's why you come to school. I didn't know anything. And he was one of the seniors. It was Leslie. And he's like, yeah, so you should just come. Changed my major, and that was it. And so from then on, it's just kind of been this on again, off again thing, where I feel like I've been kind of done with it. Not done with it as in like I hated it or anything. It was just like, you know, I don't know, I kind of like photography. And so I would kind of flip back and forth between what would pay the bills, and did some international doc, was part of some really great projects, but ended up in a full-time job. So, yeah.
I kind of know this story about approaching graduation for you. And the reason I think that's important is because I think it kind of ties into the podcast. So you were over in the VM parking
yep.
lot.
Yeah. I realized very quickly, we were about a week out from graduation, and I was sitting there in the VM parking lot. I realized with glaring clarity that my Cush RA job and that my Cush photo assistant, you know, I was an instructor in the photo lab here, all of that was going away because I was graduating, and I had no way to make money, and I panicked. Just broke down. I had a full-on breakdown in that parking lot. I called my mom. She met me on like the first floor of Brack, and she was just like, you know what, it's gonna be okay, you're going to be okay, you're not going to starve, you know that you can do this, kind of thing. And I think that's probably why I wanted to know, maybe that jump started my foray into practicality, which is like, okay, I need to know how to like pull myself up my bootstraps and fight to do this. So
then you graduated, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then what?
I went back home. I tried cold calling some of the studios, and that was like a disaster. You know, of course, you're just like, or maybe I was just scared. I think that was it. I didn't know which direction I was supposed to go. As awesome as film school was, there is, you know, the real world that you get met with. In any case, that was kind of where I realized, too, that when you work hard at what's in front of you, other people take notice. And many of the opportunities that were very big pivot points were calls out of nowhere because somebody had referred me.
So they were out of nowhere to you, but not literally out of nowhere. You worked hard on the things that were put in front of you. Like, what were some of those things?
One of the first calls out of nowhere was to go up to the GC.
Depending on who's listening to this, they may not know what the GC is. It's mm-hmm. a structural part of the organization of the church
yeah.
that you're a part of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you did some work at the GC.
I was 6 months up there. That's all I gave them because I thought that a full-time job was just the worst thing that could ever befall somebody.
Right. When you're 22 years old or whatever, 6 months seems like most of the rest of your life,
yeah,
right?
Yes. It's too long. Too long of a commitment. So while I was up there, I got a call from somebody who was just like, hey, I need a shooter. And we go internationally, and so I would like you to start shooting with us. And so that got me started in that type of world. while I was still kind of living at home, I had had in the back of my mind, you know what, I really do want to try out LA. And I got a call there from Kevin Ekwall, and he was just like, hey, I need a cinematographer for my docudrama and somebody to do the narrative sequences as well as, you know, come overseas to shoot the documentary side. And I'm just like, that's my ticket to LA because we're shooting out there.
Kevin's somebody you knew from school.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So that's a relationship that mm-hmm. then extended on.
Yeah, yeah. And then while I was out in California, I went to one of our film festivals here, Sunscreen. The one who's sponsoring this podcast went to Sunscreen. And there happened to be a guy there with a media company who was representing a media company. I had done an interview about that docudrama. And he came up to me afterwards and he's just like, I think you need to work up with us. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, where are you based? And he said, Idaho. And I'm just like, take care. You know, that's great, but thank you, but no, thank you. And I called my mom and I was just like, there's nothing up in Idaho, absolutely nothing. It's just like fields. And she's like, you hang up this phone right now and you look up the sawtooths. And I mean, it was the best thing that could have happened to me. I was able to set myself up really well up there, you know, pay off debt, get my first foray really into producing. It was a great place for me to start building some of those professional relationships and learn podcasting and, you know, all that.
So the move to LA was to shoot a project.
Yeah.
You know, or the trip or yeah. a trip slash move.
Yeah, it was a trip slash move. And I was just yeah. like, oh, yeah, I mean, this is the project they're shooting out there. It's going to have to be for a while. I might as well move.
Yeah. And yeah. that's actually really great because usually it doesn't happen that way for people. Usually mm-hmm. you don't get called out for something. Usually you have to go out and then you'll get involved in something. Mm. It happens both ways. But I think a lot of people are sort of waiting for that project that will take them out there. Mm. That just never happens,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But once you're there, then you meet people and you're mm-hmm. around when people need things and things like that. It was a unique opportunity in some ways, I think.
Yeah. I feel like a lot, it's been a string of unique opportunities, which I think brings me back to that first point. Like when Aaron Adams, like he was one of our professors here. I still remember he was leaving to go animate for Disney. You know how every speaker says, if there's one thing that you remember today, I want you to remember this one thing. This
right.
is the only thing that I have ever remembered when somebody says
okay.
that. It was, you do the best where you're at, and that's it. You know, like you do the best where you're at, and God will bless kind of thing. And it's just like,
okay.
you know what? It was just like, you focus on what's in front of you.
Yeah.
And there you go. You know, if you're designing a postcard and that's it, that's the best derm postcard that you design, and people will take notice, you know?
Okay, so you went to Idaho to do what?
So while I was in Idaho, the stability was pretty awesome. I was at a full-time position. They needed a creative director.
Okay.
And
so you went to fill a creative director mm-hmm. position.
Yep. And it was for, I say that this just doesn't exist in the real world, but yet the more that I talk to people, the more that there are these unique situations that exist out there where a guy wanted to make a production company, he wanted to make a media company, and he had the funds for it. And he said, I just want to invest in good projects. I don't care if it makes money back. And so I had really the golden opportunity of being able to play in a way. I found out that one of my passions was helping out other filmmakers who had the passion to make something else. Because I never was the director that had a million ideas in their back pocket. We got done with our senior project, and I had a blast directing it. But going around to the film festivals, they would always be like, what's your next project? I'm like, what? Look at this one in front of you. Like, is this not enough?
Right.
I've got this one.
Right.
Look.
Yeah.
But it never was a thing where I had 20 other ideas. And so I'm just like, man, these other people who do, like, I need something made. They want to make something. I can get them connected. And that was that.
It wasn't that you were brought there to direct a bunch of projects.
No.
It was that you were brought there to hunt for talent and to hunt mm-hmm. for projects. So it was your job to see where money was deserved, because mm-hmm. you were sort of put in charge in a way of this person's funding that they had for this initiative. Is
yeah.
that right?
Yeah. It was really great to see some of the projects come through and be in a position to say, hey, we can contribute to this project that you're working on, you know? And learning some of the back roads, you know, for instance, when I was doing photography, I did this photo manipulation of a Star Wars wedding. There were tons of comments that was just like, oh, Disney come for her, and you know, all this stuff. And somebody was telling me, you need to lawyer up really quick, because I don't know, because it, you know, like things going viral, you know, like you can expect that there's going to be a lot of offhanded comments about what have you. And so, I mean, it intimidated me enough to talk to an entertainment lawyer, and it was great because this job allowed me to have a lot of really good conversations, not on my dime, but conversations with an entertainment lawyer asking him all of my questions. It gave me the opportunity to talk to a lot of these people.
How long did that last, and sort of where did that lead?
That lasted about 3.5 years, which is the longest that I have ever been in one spot, which is, it's quite a milestone. 3.5 years doesn't seem, I don't know, I feel like I haven't necessarily bounced around that a lot, but when I think about it, I guess I have. Near the end, the pandemic hit, and we had to pivot quite quickly. So one of the things that we did was we created educational events for filmmakers, for industry professionals, and, you know, bringing people together in a networking situation where we can learn, we can network and all of that fun stuff, and have a pitch competition. And I was able to produce that event, loved it. After that happened, we were gearing up for the next annual event, and then COVID hit. And so, of course, we did what everybody did, and we started a podcast because we needed an outlet, number one, to get that educational content out.
Right.
You know, he wanted to do something. And so we're like, all right, let's start in a podcast. And he's like, all right, you're going to be the host. And I'm just like, I don't want to be the host. And they're like, you know, they just stuck me behind a mic, and they're like, well, you're the host now. And I actually really liked it because regardless if anyone was listening, I was able to ask all of my questions.
Right.
And I'm a very curious person by nature. And so it was great for me because I could have kind of this unrestricted access to these people. I could have an excuse to contact them, number one. Number two, people usually like talking about their journey to this point, and there's a lot that can be learned from it. So I don't know. It was very practical for me, and it was setting me up well. And it was really widening a network that I didn't realize that I needed, you know, that was kind of an offshoot of it, where I was just like, oh my gosh, now I know that I can kind of contact these people, you know, if I really needed to. But, and some of them I have, you know, some of them who've become mentors, and it's really great.
Right. So when they said, you're going to start a podcast and you're the host, that was, in some ways, them saying, you're going to get an education from a bunch of great mentors, and you're going to expand your Rolodex to include all these people you never would have come into contact with otherwise.
Having those particular conversations with people, not being afraid to approach them anymore because of the podcast. So,
So that podcast was called There to Hear.
Yeah.
And if you look on the places, and listen to it, it's still intros with There to Hear and everything. But now it's The Practical Filmmaker. So that seems like there's a story there. And the listeners maybe had like a 12-second update version of that. But sort of what happened, and how did you get to where you are in terms of the new name of the podcast and everything?
My time there came to a close, and I knew that, well, I didn't know. It was actually Michael. Michael, he was my coworker. He's just like, you know, I really think you have something with this podcast. People seem to resonate with it, and I think you could do something really, really good here. And it's like, it's working. When Michael said that we might have something, I was just like, huh, well, there might be a way that we can continue it. So I called up Julio. And I was just like, you know what? Hey, I have this podcast. You know, he's listened to some of it. And I was just like, hey, I don't know if you are interested in doing a podcast. But he's like, actually, you know what? Sunscreen, we wanted to start a podcast. So what we could do is just kind of hop on yours, sponsor yours, and you can do it. It's like, all right. I mean, that's awesome. And at the same time, I contacted Stu over at the Filmmaker Institute. And I was just like, hey, do you guys have a need for a podcast? And he was just like, actually, we were wanting to start a podcast. can just hop on your train and help you sponsor it. And it's allowed us to continue.
When the pandemic hit, you guys started a podcast. Yeah. You were the host. It was Colab's podcast. You were the host. Colab was trying to figure out what they wanted to do with the podcast as time moved on. And so they were changing the schedule and making it more often and less often and not happening at all. And then then your time came to an end there, and they didn't want to do a podcast anymore, and you weren't there anymore. But there was sort of this sense that, oh, actually something of value was created there. And you sort of connected all the dots to make it possible for the podcast to keep happening, and then took it over. And what used to be Colab's podcast is now your podcast.
Yeah.
So it's more of a personal thing now than it was.
Yeah. And it was brought about a whole lot more realistically. And not that I didn't try, because like I designed all that stuff too.
Right.
But I think for this one, it was, like, for instance, Michael said, you need a headshot on your cover art. I'm just like, no, because like there's a reason why I'm always behind the camera. I hate taking pictures. I mean, I love taking pictures, but I hate being in front of the camera.
You don't want the pictures to be of you.
No. And I hated it, but it made it a whole lot more real that this was mine, like sink or swim. It's going to be mine.
I alluded to earlier sort of there maybe being a connection between your experience right after school and this podcast. But one of the themes I've definitely seen in the show is that you're making the podcast that you wish you had had when you were a student or shortly after graduating.
Yeah. And you know what the horrible part about it is? I probably still wouldn't have listened to it.
Well, in some ways, I feel like the podcast that you created during your time at Colab was, in hindsight, preparing you for what was next.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel like freelancing is, you know, like at these team building activities and stuff, they have people do the trust fall, things like that. I feel like being a freelancer is like some version of that, but you don't actually know that anybody's going to catch you until it happens.
It's just constant free
Right.
But I mean, you had the same journey too, because like you are the second person that I interviewed, and I'm just like, oh, this is real interesting, because like COVID had just happened.
Right.
And a lot of how this stuff was born was just like, okay, film industry shut down, how are all the filmmakers handling it? And I'm just like, this is a really interesting one, because you decided to go freelance. I mean, obviously you had decided way before.
Right.
But it just so happened that you going freelance after being a professor happened to line up really well with the time when the whole entire industry shut down.
Yeah, so, almost perfectly, like almost within a few weeks.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
So for an artist, it's got to be the greatest freedom to be able to be a freelancer and still earn enough to live, you know.
Right.
But you know, seeing your journey, I'm just like, oh my gosh, he jumped and he's got a family, so maybe I'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm always nervous to encourage people to go freelance because I know it doesn't go well for everybody, but it also can work. And I feel like people don't always see that. Like they just see the fear side and they see the horror stories side and they see it not turning out. Mm-hmm. But that's because you just don't hear about the stories where it turns out as much. Like, yeah. Well, I don't know. I think you don't get the middle. You get like extreme success or you get super failure. But like people just live a freelance lifestyle and are successful with it also.
Well, okay. This is, I don't know if you've ever seen The Guardian, but there's like, it's, you know, Coast Guard.
Kevin Costner and
Ashton Kutcher.
Ashton Kutcher, yes.
But Kevin Costner,
I have seen it.
Yeah, he was giving him advice, talking about, you know, like his endurance and stuff like that, and said, you know, you swim as hard as you can and as fast as you can, and for as long as you can, and the sea takes a rest, kind of thing. Where I found out I was losing my job. Literally 7 minutes later, I sat on my couch and I was like, holy crap, what am I going to do? 7 minutes later, I was on the phone with three other people asking about their jobs. And, you know, like, so yes, stuff just does happen. But I did realize this time around just how much you can do to make that happen.
So you said 7 minutes later you were on the phone with other people doing
asking about jobs.
Oh, so you were calling.
Yeah, no,
oh,
I was
so,
calling.
So you gave yourself 7 minutes to process and then you jumped into action.
Yeah.
I see.
So I realized that this was going to be ending, and I didn't know any of the details of, like, you know, what that would look like yet, how long that I had. But I was immediately on the phone with people who were just like, hey, you know what? We were going to do this event together. We'll contract with you. You come produce for us. And I was just like, absolutely, done. That took care of, you know, the first little bit.
Well, good for you. So you've been doing this podcast for a little over a year now. What do you think the most important thing that you've learned from your guests has been, or from one of your guests?
Oh, my
like,
stars.
Is there some sort of thing that stands out as like, oh, that was really great advice?
I guess if there was anything that I learned is that people are a whole lot more accessible than you think. And a lot more people, there's this weird reputation that I guess filmmakers have gotten for not helping people.
Yeah.
But at least in this sense, that's the opposite of what I've found. Like,
yeah,
most people are willing to help you out, especially if you're willing to learn.
Yeah.
So
people are more accessible than you think, and people are more willing to help than you think. If there's an asterisk to that at all, it's that the context of your introduction helps. So, like, if they really don't know you from anywhere and you don't approach well, you might not get your foot in that door. But it seems like, by and large, you can. Like, it's just not that hard.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Like, seriously, if you want to network, start a podcast.
Right?
I'm serious.
Right?
Because I think some of the walkaway ones that I can think of were, they were like at least eye-opening, were any of the ones having to do with distribution or agents, because I had never talked to anybody in distribution or any kind of agent before, and I didn't know how it worked. So regardless if I had any kind of listener question, I just forged ahead with my own.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I think that it's an interesting thing. I taught for a long time, and I read a book a while ago that talked about the curse of knowledge and how when you have known something for a long time, it's hard to imagine the mindset of somebody that doesn't know that same thing that you know.
Mm.
And it's called the curse of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all teachers are afflicted with it to some degree. And I think one of the things that, you know, I've listened to all of your podcasts, and one of the things that I think is interesting about you as a host is that you know enough to ask intelligent questions, but you don't know everything. So you're able to ask the questions that your audience probably has.
Yeah.
You ask those questions that I think the audience needs asked on their behalf, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I have my next question, which is related to the last one. If you could distill the advice of all your guests into a few short sentences, what would it be?
Honestly, what it seems to be is that it really is simple. You know, you just have to do it. You have to work hard. You have to be nice. Be nice about it. But, you know, for the people who are saying it's so hard to break into the industry, it's really kind of simple. You have to put yourself out there to do it and make those relationships, and people aren't going to work with you if they don't like working with you.
Right.
So I say a lot in my podcast about balance, you know, because balance is important to me. But psychology fascinates me too. And to have a level of self-awareness where you're just like, okay, people aren't calling me. Let's figure out why.
Right.
And if that is something that you have to work out from your childhood or whatever, I mean, for your own life's sake,
right.
Do it.
Right.
Figure out why. Have some self-awareness and see, you know, if it really is that simple to just work hard and be nice, then why isn't that happening for you? You know, that kind of thing. And I guess my own aside to that would be do whatever it takes to figure out why either of those aren't working for you.
Yeah. So if I were to summarize what you're saying that you just put yourself out there, work hard, do your best at what you're trying to do, and be likable.
Response.
Be likable. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Do you think it's that simple?
I'd like to believe it is.
Yeah. Is there an asterisk next to that? Or is it, do you think if you were to summarize the whole of advice that you've gotten for newcomers from your podcast guests, is it really as simple as that?
So the old timers who I've interviewed have made it that simple. The ones who have been in the industry for 20, 30 years have made it that simple, because I don't know, maybe it's like having a baby and you forget all the hard work that you went through.
It's quite possible.
But for them, what I heard repeatedly was that they put themselves in a position that made people around them, made it impossible for those around them to forget them. You know, David Allen Arnold showed up every single day at a place that did not ask for his presence.
Right.
With coffee and bagels and what have you. Cleaned up their shop, and the guy said, "You're going on my next flight." That was it for him. And, you know, look at him now.
Yeah.
So, but it's the same thing where if somebody is pestering you for a job, the first thing that they're going to think of is like, "Oh, wow, you remember that annoying kid? Well, hey, that annoying kid, he works pretty hard. Let's put him doing something, even if it's like a nothing thing." And that's kind of your end. I mean, for the most part, a lot of what they said was, I showed up.
Yeah.
I sent out 100 resumes. I got one back.
Yeah.
You know, I called 100 people in the phone book and I got one call back.
Yeah.
And that's a recurring thing, you know?
So here's, takes a rest. Here's something that, nice, you've made your case. So here's something that always nags at the back of my mind is, if you're not talking to the people that didn't make it, how do you know that they didn't do all the same things?
Oh, no. Well, actually, I have talked to some.
Okay.
I have. And you know what?
They didn't make it on the podcast.
Well, because they figured out a different path for themselves that they like better.
Okay.
And there's nothing wrong with that either. Because, you know, for some who wanted a different balance, or, you know, it just wasn't for them, they found their thing.
They found another way to be successful doing something else.
Yeah. And if that success is earning a living that they feel comfortable with, you know, I've seen them go into nursing. I've seen them go into counseling. You know, I've seen them go into fields where it can allow the lifestyle that they want. And, you know, I mean, sinkers are going to sink. It doesn't matter which field that you're in. Mm. So you're either going to take care of yourself and be an asset to society, or you're going to be the dead weight that we drag along with us, or just get left behind.
Yeah.
And like, everybody kind of has to take the responsibility of their own life. So honestly, if the ones who didn't make it, I mean, it's because they may have wanted something else at the same time. You know, like, there is a debate in their head. They need to listen to one.
Yeah. Tell me a story of something you learned the hard way.
Yeah, so I had this unicorn lens. It was not unicorn lens. No, I had this lens. We'll just call it Eleanor for all of the Gone in 60 Seconds fans. Something happened to this lens. Like, every single time, it got dropped 4 times, and every single time it was not my fault.
Oh, wow.
And the very first time that it happened, a student was moving my bag, and of course, that fantastic sound that you hear of expensive equipment on concrete.
Right. So the bag wasn't closed or something.
Nope. Yeah. And that was my fault. Maybe that's the real lesson. Close your crap. So that was like mistake number one. Mistake number two, I called the insurance agency. They're just like, "Oh yeah, no, that's fine. This is great. We'll get it. You won't ever need to pay really more than $300 to repair a lens, you know." But I didn't realize that in the long run, it would have been cheaper for me to just repair the lens myself, because again, you won't really take more than $300. And this is photography lenses. This isn't cinema lenses.
Cinema.
So I don't know in that respect, but I had insurance on it. I took out the claim, realized that later, when I moved states, they're just like, hey, so you have a couple of hits on this. And I'm just like, wait, what? And she's like, yeah, it's connected to your social security number. So any insurance company can look that up and say, you have these two or whatever claims from times that it wasn't even your fault. So then I had insurance premiums that were higher that I was stuck with, that if it happened again, I just, that last time, the last two times actually, I had them just replace the lens or pay for the repairs. So it didn't reflect on my insurance. I mean, if it was my fault and I got like all my gear stolen or something like that, yeah, then I would consider it. But yeah, insurance, that's a thing.
Yeah, insure your stuff, but try not to make claims unless you really have to, because there may be other ways that it comes back to bite you later.
Yeah.
Has doing this podcast changed your life at all?
Yes, it has.
And how would you say that it has changed it?
I think for the third or fourth time in my life, I was thinking, well, man, I guess I'm just going to have to not do film anymore. I don't know. And it kind of dove me back into that world. It doesn't take much for me to be interested in somebody else's life.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe that sounds creepy. But if they have, like, for instance, I like being genuinely interested in everyone and what they're doing.
Careers are interesting.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They are. And like people's why. And then, you know, I think one of my favorite segments of the show is now, like with Practical Filmmaker, was one of your ideas, which was, hey, I want to ask about the people's new gear and old gear. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, that is so nuts and bolts. That's amazing. Yeah. And I love asking them about that stuff because, you know, they're all of the philosophical stuff of how they got from here to there to here, you know, whatever,
right,
gets dropped. And we start talking about what's actually in front of us.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I work with this and I work with that. What price range is that? And what are its quirks?
It is almost as though we planned this segue. But the next question that I have for you is... what are some of the tools that you use to help get your job done, whether that's you're producing now or you've been podcasting for a while? What's something new that's changing the way that you work?
Well, for podcasting, I remember Headliner being a thing at the very beginning, where being able to make videos very quickly with, you know, waveforms and you know, it will auto-generate some sometimes awful captions that you have to correct.
Right.
But, you know, for what it does for the price, you know, that was pretty cool to find out that, because I had no idea how they did this, you know, with the, if you wanted to make one that had like that karaoke where it lit up the words. I searched forever to try to find that, and it bothered the crud out of me that I couldn't find it. But when
so
I finally did, it was good.
Is it fair to say that Headliner is a tool that helps you make like Instagram stories type of content?
Yeah. It's for Instagram.
Easily.
Yeah, it's for Instagram. It's the easily digestible, like 30 seconds, you know. We tried it out at the very beginning and it was like way too long of a segment for it
right.
to be practical.
Right.
And you're just like, all right, people are not going to want to watch this.
Right.
But that was really cool.
Does it have any quirks?
Yeah, it does. It works within a browser, so... Some of the stuff that you put in, like for instance, uploading a video, it has different tracks. It's almost as if somebody designed it who was not necessarily a filmmaker.
Yeah.
So some of it is just like, all right, this is not as intuitive as it could be. One thing that we're using a lot on this particular shoot is Discord. But we are shooting an actual feature film and we have all of the departments on a channel.
So what is Discord?
Discord is an app where I think it started with gamers.
Yeah.
And it was a way for everybody to it's a lot like
Slack.
Yeah, it's a lot like Slack. The one quirk of Discord that I wish it had, that Slack has, is an ability to reply on its own thread, you know, but it is really, really nice to have art department on a thread and wardrobe and, you know, G&E and producers unit and all of that stuff through the same app. You can, you know, instead of bringing up everybody's name in a text and it kind of gets lost.
Right.
It can be centralized to, like, all right, if I have a Discord message, it has to do with this film.
Is there like an old favorite, an old standby that helps you get your job done?
I am not much of a gearhead, actually.
Yeah.
So that's why it's interesting for me to hear about other people's gear, is because I usually get something and stick with it. I'm still shooting on a Mark III. Like, if there's something that I really like, that's just for me.
You're a Canon 5D Mark III?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I usually get something, and if it works, I stick with it until it dies.
I think we're to the point when I ask you what questions I should have asked you.
If you could tell your audience something.
Okay.
What would you tell them? And I would tell them that accessibility that I have, you have too, because I ask every single episode who the listener questions, like who has listener questions. And you'd be surprised, because like I ask every single one of them. And you'd be surprised how hard it is sometimes to like wrench questions out of people. I'm just like, this source is right in front of you. Why are you not asking what you want to ask?
Yeah.
Yeah, if I could tell them one thing, it would be ask your questions. Like, DM me. I don't care. If you have my number, text me. Email me, Tanya@thepracticalfilmmaker.com.
Yeah.
Email me your questions. We post up on Instagram before I interview. I usually post it up in stories.
Okay.
So, like, who I'm interviewing next, and I ask for listener questions. So,
Shameless plug time. Where can we find you online?
They're going to be tired of hearing this because it's like so many times that I say thepracticalfilmmaker.com.
Right.
Tanya@thepracticalfilmmaker.com.
Instagram or anything else?
Instagram, TK Musgrave.
Okay.
And The Practical Filmmaker. No, actually, no. Oh my gosh, this is horrible. @practicalfilmmaker.
Okay, so this is usually where we end it, but I do have one more question. What's on the horizon for you? Like, in 3 years, where do you hope your career is? Will Practical Filmmaker still be part of that? Will you be producing? Will you be enjoying a renaissance of photography in your life? Like, and I know that maybe is contrary to the advice of do your best where you're with the thing that's in front of you.
Yeah.
But if you could choose what's in front of you, what would that be?
I think the podcast would still be a part of it because there's still a lot of learning to do. There's still a lot more people to talk to.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I haven't lost interest in that yet.
Yeah.
As far as producing, I figured out that I really like it. So, I mean, this one right here, this is my first feature. And so I am really looking forward to learning.
Yeah.
Even if it's just people management.
That's essentially what producing is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
As an observer and sort of collaborator, you know, with you on the things that you're doing, it seems like you're moving into a space where you are a connector. Like you're becoming sort of a hub out from which spokes radiate in different directions. You excel when you're connecting with people. You're making all these things come together. You know, years ago, I don't know that I would have predicted that per se, but it's totally congruent like with who you are as a person and what fascinates you and all of that. So
being a connector part is a big passion of mine. Once I realized that these two people are headed in the same direction and they need each other, but they don't know each other.
Right.
Like, it's a very simple decision for me. I love connecting people.
Okay. Well, Tanya, thank you for giving me the opportunity to turn the tables on you today.
Yeah. Thank you for the idea.
If you enjoyed this interview, follow us right here and on Instagram, and check out more episodes at thepracticalfilmmaker.com. If you have comments or know someone who would be a great guest on our show, someone other than Tanya Musgrave, send in your suggestions to Tanya@thepracticalfilmmaker.com. Be well and God bless. We'll see you next time on The Practical Filmmaker.